heritageradionetwork.org. This is the news.
This piece was brought to you by Academy Opus Cassius, academy-mons.com.
As cheese lovers in Russia are still grappling with the fallout from the government's ban on, among other things, imported cheeses from France and Italy, here's an update to a story we initially reported on in August. The story was concerning the ban imposed by the Russian government against a variety of imported goods, including food from the U.S., European Union, Canada, Norway, and Australia. This ban was in response to sanctions placed against Russia for its role in the Ukraine conflict. In an effort to mitigate the impacts of the ban, EU officials announced they would supply EU dairy producers of butter, skimmed milk powder, and cheeses with protected status, such as the famed Italian cheese Parmigiano Reggiano, with 3 to 7 months' worth of financial aid. This aid was to help them cover the costs of cold storage to hold cheeses that had been destined for Russian consumers, while other outlets were found. But officials recently halted the program. The reason? They were inundated with claims. Almost 90% of the resources allotted for the program had been used in the first few weeks of it being announced. Furthermore, according to Yahoo News reports, officials overseeing the program cited numerous questionable claims, especially from Italy. This may have sent up a red flag, given that Finland and the Baltic nations account for at least 75% of Russian cheese imports from the EU. To get greater clarity on this whole issue, we have Greg Blaze, host of Heritage Radio Network's Cutting the Curd, who first reported on the ban here in the studio. Greg's going to provide us with the latest on where this cheese story stands, as well as where it's headed. Greg, thanks for joining us.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
So what to make of this latest development?
Well, I mean, I know as much as you know about the legalities. I was not aware of the EU's plan to subsidize cheeses, but it makes sense that they would be subsidizing, or that their initial plan was to subsidize the PDO cheeses, because those are probably easier to quantify because there's consortium attached to them. You know, you can tell how much is being made, where it's going, because all of that is traceable back to the animals and the milk that's used. I was just in Italy last week, and I can speak to seeing cheese that has been returned from Russia, and it was I was at a communal farm in Tuscany. The brand name is Il Fortetto. It's a beautiful place, by the way, and they are they produce DOP Pecorino Toscano in and amongst a large amount of other sheep's milk cheeses, and they export a fair amount of cheese to Russia. And as I was looking and walking through the caves, I noticed all of these massive racks of cheeses with these red tags on them that said Russia on them. And I was talking to Stefan, says Stefano, who is the owner, and I was like, what the hell is this? What's going on with that? And he's like, well, this has all been returned to us.
Oh, wow.
And I mean, it was in an amount of kilograms. It wasn't one. It was in – I went in four sort of aging rooms that he had. And in each room, there was a significant amount. And I don't want to get the percentage of cheese he sends to Russia out. You know, I don't want to speculate on the amount. But I saw a lot of red tags. And he did not seem as though he was being subsidized, because I feel he was a pretty forthright guy. And I feel like he would have said that to me, because I asked him, you know, what are you going to do with this? And he basically was like, do you want to buy some?
Maybe there's an import-export opportunity
but the thing is that, and like I said to Erin when she asked me about this before, nothing food-related, as we know, happens in a box. The cheese-making process starts with milk, and then for some of these cheeses, for him, it's a three-month aging period before that he can even start the logistics of shipping that cheese to a place like Russia. So you're talking about, 6 months maybe worth of time that you're paying people and paying out money to make cheese, age the cheese, box the cheese, then you're paying, you're paying fuel costs for people to take the cheese to the point of egress, and then it gets there, and then that whole process reverses, and then it ends up back in your warehouse, and you don't have a dime for it. And that was what That was what I saw.
Mm-hmm. Do you see this? I mean, given that Putin had said he wants to keep this going for a year, this ban, do you see this potentially devastating?
I mean, people, that's an interesting, and I mean, I personally do. I don't see how it couldn't be. Food, let's the man I was talking with, the owner of Il Fortetto, Stefano, he was talking about how the consortium, and specifically his farm, was working to help breeders of sheep get up to a number of sheep where they could produce enough milk to hire enough staff to make better cheese, all of the machinations of the business of cheese making. But the only way that all of those people get paid is that if the end user pays for the cheese. I mean, it's really simple. So if you have 20,000 kilograms of cheese returned to you, and a retailer can't bill them for it. I mean, how long is that before? How long does before the numbers catch up to you on that? Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Because it's food. It's like in the restaurant business. You know, a restaurant can go out of business in a month because it's just a fluid business. I mean, your inventory is perishables, and you know it's cash. I mean, any smaller producers or even our farmstead producers, I would imagine would start to run out of money, especially if you have earmarked 20% of your yield for let's say for a Russian supermarket chain, and they have these contracts and they make these sales, and so I mean there's definitely negative impact.
Mm-hmm. Especially given that lag in terms of production and everything and how you have to be planning for this in terms of production as well as distribution.
I mean, it is. There's a lot to worry about. Just the nuts and bolts of shipping perishables across multiple continents is really, really expensive and very precarious no matter how well you do it. It's expensive and just getting it there. I mean, every time when I worked as a wholesaler, every time an air container showed up and it was 95% in good shape, it was like Christmas, you know? Because just getting it there is hard enough. And then you got to send it back. So it just, I mean, the planning is yeah, that's just not good.
It's a lot going on. Do you have any sense in terms of is this affecting U.S., how much this is affecting the U.S. cheese industry?
I mean, I haven't been affected by it. I actually, because I was interested in it and concerned about it, I've asked the question to producers, but it hasn't been brought to my attention. I imagine there'll be a lot of inexpensive cheese for me to buy soon. Unfortunately.
It's really an important story and one I'm sure you're going to keep on top of and cutting the curd.
I mean, I definitely will. It is an important story to me. I mean, it's my livelihood, but it's just when you work with cheese, you see that these little objects, these things you sell represent so many people and animals. And you're the end user, the retailer. That's where that's the final transaction before it gets consumed. And if I don't have product to sell, my store doesn't do well. You know, it's bad.
Yeah. It's really a good point in terms of, you know, we're not all working in a vacuum here. We all rely on each other, especially in terms of food production when you're not talking industrial food production.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, Greg Blaze from Cutting the Curd, thank you so much for joining us and giving us your insights on this.
My pleasure.
Really appreciate it. And this is Nancy Gagliardi for HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Thanks for listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Heritage_Radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.